Hello, this is Jonathan Mosen. Those of us who go back far enough to remember the golden age of bulletin boards and PhotoNet will certainly remember Phil Scoble on many of the blindness-related echoes. For new internet users and those of us who've migrated from bulletin boards to the internet, many of us will know Phil Scoble for his production of the Internet Phone Book of Blind Users and many other projects. Phil Scoble is an entrepreneur, a fantastic disseminator of information, a raconteur, and generally an interesting person to talk to. On the Blind Line of Saturday, August the 14th, we spent some time with Phil Scoble talking about his life and interests. We began by finding out how he got mixed up in all of this computer stuff.
I'd heard some tapes and talked to other people and just really wanted it for the ability to use word processors and databases and that type of thing. That mostly got my interest. That was long before the internet, of course.
Indeed, because you're a veteran of PhotoNet. I remember when you and I used to pretty regularly appear on Blink Talk.
Yeah, that's right.
So when did you get your first computer?
Right at the end of 1989, and then it was about 6 months after that I got on the PhotoNet, finally bought a little cheap 1200 baud battery-powered modem and fired it up and got on the PhotoNet to see what that was like.
Oh yes, I remember after upgrading from a 1200 baud to a 2400 baud modem, I just couldn't believe the speed increase.
That was fast, jumping from 12 to 24 back then.
It sure was. And did you work for yourself prior to getting a computer?
Yeah, I did. I've done a number of things. I started out back in about 1980 doing high-speed cassette duplication and did that for a number of years and things related to recording.
Have you always worked for yourself?
Not always. I was in the vending stamp program here in the States for a little while, and back in the mid-70s I quit that job and started doing self-employed type work.
Now, as a non-American, and obviously there are a number of people from all around the world listening to you now, I'm quite interested in this vending stand program and the whole Randolph Shepherd thing. I know that the consumer organizations are both united. It's one of the things they are united on in protecting that and ensuring that it's not damaged in any way. What's the logic behind it? Because on the one hand, you have consumer groups saying, well, blind people can succeed on their own merits and should do so. And on the other, you have what appears on the outside to be a kind of protectionist thing where blind people are given the right to run these vending facilities.
Yeah, not all of the vending stands and snack bars and cafeterias are in federal buildings, but that's what the law was for, is to supposedly give the blind person, through one of the state agencies for the blind, a first opportunity. But I don't know what the percentage is. It probably varies from state to state, of course. But like here in Colorado, there are a few of the vending stands in federal buildings, and but not most of them aren't. But that was the plan behind it, is to. I think it was largely a lot of the blind guys that came out of World War II that lost their sight during World War II from injuries, to give them an opportunity. It seemed like I read that someplace or have heard that somewhere, but now they've expanded it and they're just competitive. They go into other public buildings and even private buildings for that matter and bid on them and try to get the companies to allow them to put the vending stand in that particular facility. In fact, the one I was in was the first one I was in, was in a law school here in Denver, and then I was in a partnership with a guy. After I left that and went into my own, it was in a Denver public school building that I was in, so they really weren't, neither one of those were actually federally funded or based or anything else.
It seems to me that when we look at all of the things you've done, one thing that comes through consistently is that you're an entrepreneur, you've got a gift for realizing where there's a market niche, and you meet that market. Is that a skill that can be taught, or is it an instinct?
No, it can certainly be taught. I've really been sold on it. I originally, before I went into any of that, was a social worker in the state of Nebraska before I moved to Colorado in 1972. And my job was, I had about 45 to 50 blind clients. And a blind guy had actually started a program called Project Success. And there were several social workers under his authority, and he was supposed to organize everybody. And each person had a different group of people, and I just happened to have blind people, of course. And our job was to go out and try to get people jobs. And they were all disabled people in one way or another, but like one guy had all wheelchair people, and we just each had our own little group of clients of 40 or 50 or 60 clients. And mine, of course, were blind, and we were supposed to go out and try to get them employment. And it's a difficult job. I mean, it's there are a lot of jobs available, at least in the States, for blind people, but not any that make an awful lot of money. And even people that have a lot of education. And I mean, I know blind people that have PhDs that are unemployed right now. Well, I know sighted people that have PhDs that are unemployed right now. So it's really at the cost of living the way it is in the United States, and it's just good jobs are hard to come by. And a number of years ago, I became interested in self-employment, and I'm convinced that it's an untapped resource that agencies and organizations for the blind have just overlooked, largely because perhaps they don't think it can be taught or nobody's ever taught it. I think it's been a couple of years ago, I produced a set of six tapes called the Quick Start Home Business Seminar, which simply goes into all of the details of starting a business. I've even sold a few of those overseas, for that matter, in Europe, and I think I sent a couple to Australia and New Zealand even during the time I was producing them and selling a lot of them. And though I'm sure the business practices may be somewhat different overseas, the principles are all the same. The laws may be different, but the principles of self-employment are all basically the same. And then at the end of that seminar, there were six tapes. The first four tapes, I just talk about how to get started, what equipment you may or may not need, what you need as far as a computer is concerned, and speech, and all of the things related to that for a blind person. But the last two tapes were 12 interviews with 12 different blind people that are self-employed. Some are full-time employed people. Some are just working part-time and making a little extra money. And some people that I interviewed were making a lot of money. And most of them were here in the United States, but I did interview one man in Canada, and what he was doing and how he was doing it. So I think it's an untapped source there for blind people all around the world, where they may very well be able to make some money or even make all of their living working that way.
Unemployment in the U.S. is at a post-World War II low, and yet the unemployment estimates among blind people in the same country are around about 60 to 70%. What's the primary reason for that disparity?
You know, I'm not exactly for sure. Somebody asked me the other day, a blind person asked me if I thought that it was harder for a blind person to get a job in the 90s versus back in the 70s, and I think it is. I think it was easier to get jobs back then, but the cost of living was lower, and you could live on a lower income. It seems like the spread of income versus what it costs to live seems to be greater now, and I don't have any statistical data to quote for that, but just my own everyday living expenses seems to be a lot. It just takes a lot more money to live now, and some of that, I think, is confirmed by double income families where the husband and wife are both working. It seems like now blind couples, just both of them, just practically need to be working to make a living. So it It's hard to say exactly what the specific reason. Some of it may be due to government assistance. When you consider, which isn't a lot, I mean, the blind people I know that are getting some government assistance each month, it's not a lot of money, yet to do better, they'd probably have to make three or four times that amount of money out in the secular world to equal the benefits that they're getting. And it's not necessarily that it's a bad thing. It's just that it's creating a gap that's going to be hard to bridge. And that's one reason why I think that self-employment may be a possible bridge to help people get out of that kind of dilemma. Because once you get in it, like I said, here in the States, a blind guy making $40,000 a year, which sounds like a lot of money, really is not. If he's living by himself, it may not. He may be able to live fairly comfortably, but here in Denver, I just found out here just this week that the average house in Denver sells for $205,000. And that $205,000 or $200,000 or thereabouts is a very expensive house in a very expensive part of town. And my house is worth about half that money. So, you know, you start adding all of those figures up. And the employment thing is really a big problem. I think it's the biggest problem among the blind. And I don't think it was that way a few years ago, because when I first got married, we lived on $300, and but our rent was very low, and we lived fairly comfortably. We didn't own a house, of course, and once I got a job and we were living on about twice that much money, we could have gotten a house back then. But nowadays, those types of things are very difficult to do, and it takes a lot of money, and the big jobs just don't seem to be available. At least not as easily as they maybe were a number of years ago.
Well, of course, you will have read many email lists, and before that, PhotoNet Echoes, where we've talked about this unemployment problem. And I guess there are two distinct schools of thought. On the one hand, you have people who say there are attitudinal barriers posed by sighted people and their ignorance, not always discrimination, but just ignorance of what we're capable of. And then on the other hand, you have people who say there are too many blind people who've been mollycoddled, pampered, they've digested the negative stereotypes about blindness that come from sighted people, and if where there's a will, there's a way, they should get off their bottoms and get a job. Is there truth in both of those theories, or do you subscribe to a particular one of those theories?
You know, I think it's a combination of those things. I there is no way that anybody can make me believe if I had the power to go out and offer a person the ability to make $50,000 or $60,000 a year, which is still not an awful lot of money in the States. It's a lot of money. I wish I was making that much money. And between my wife and I, we are. But even then, when I was 10 and 15 years old, we were able to live on a single income. We didn't have a lot, but my father was able to make enough money, and he didn't have a big job, but he had a good job, and we lived. I didn't consider myself to be poor. We had lived in a nice neighborhood and everything, and all that type of thing. But doing that nowadays, it really does take a double income, and I think it's a combination of. It's hard to be motivated when you know that even if you get specialized training and you go out and make $9 or $10 an hour, and you still cannot make enough money to rent and pay your bills and have money left over at the end of the month, that's pretty discouraging. And I don't blame people at all for not being motivated to go out and do that. And a $9 or $10 an hour job, even in the Denver area, for a blind person, is the higher end of income. And it's not enough. It's simply not enough to allow a person to live at least equally, you know, with other people in the community.
I suppose somebody from the right of the spectrum would counter that by saying, well, many sighted people have those problems too, but they don't have the luxury of falling back on Social Security.
That's true. The other difference is that the blind person has added expenses. Try to buy a Braille writer now today. It's not like you can go out and buy a printer for $150 and hook it up to your computer, but a blind person needs a Braille writer, and Braille paper is much more expensive than typing paper. And you know, you start adding all those things up, and you're spending $500, $600, $700, $800, $900 on software just to control your $300, $400, $500, or $600 voice synthesizer. And you know, you start adding all those things up, and there are a great deal more expenses than just going out and getting the job. You need some tools, as it were, just to get started. And of course, some of the state agencies here in the States are providing that, and rehab agencies and maybe even organizations are helping provide some of that, but it usually falls short. It's usually less than what you need to really do the job right.
Do you think the state has an obligation to compensate for those clearly quantifiable costs of blindness?
I guess if I were to answer that and be politically correct, I'd probably say yes, but I'm not too sure I believe that either, but there is no simple answer for it. I know that the average blind person is not going to be able to come up with the difference in those areas. In fact, I have a friend right here in Denver that went through a training program, and the one thing they did do is get him a good computer with good software, that basically the tools that he needed. They didn't get him a job, though he thought that's what would happen after the training. But fortunately, he had the skills, and he went out and he got an $11 an hour job, and he wouldn't have been able to even get that if he wouldn't have had the computers and the software to compete, as it were, with the sighted people at that company. So that did help. I mean, that if that was the very least that the state did, it certainly would be a start. And that's, even in my home business seminar, that's what I point out. If you can get a computer, then some of the rest of it you may be able to do on your own. But if you can't afford the computer, then you can't even get to first base.
One of the things that you have done since you've acquired a computer yourself is spent a lot of your time helping other people through initiatives such as the Library of Topical Texts, and more recently the phone book, and other things that you've done. Can you tell me a bit about the motivation that keeps you going on those projects, which can't be exactly profitable and yet are of enormous benefit to people?
Yeah, I threaten to give up on some of that stuff just about every month, but because it is a lot of work, and recently I've gotten a lot of extra volunteer help, especially with the phone book files and archives. That started out when I first got on the Internet in September of 1994. I just started collecting people's names and email addresses, thinking that monthly I would send out a directory of blind people on the Internet, and so that you could get in touch with people that you may know, you just didn't realize happened to me on the Internet. And within probably 6 months, that thing expanded. People started sending me articles that they'd found on the Internet, which is why I got on the Internet in the first place, was just for the availability of information that I didn't have otherwise as a blind person. And they started sending me articles. I created another file. I started hearing about other mailing lists that the blind were on or starting, and I started putting that into another file, and then news items of interest to the blind and blind-related businesses that were coming onto the Internet. And before too long, I had 24 files here, and spending 40 or 50 hours myself a month just trying to edit all the material and get it sent out. And before too long, it just got away from me. But fortunately, recently here, over a dozen people have volunteered to help, and it's spreading out the workload, as it were. There's no way to put a value on that, I suppose. I mean, I could stop doing it tomorrow, and yes, some people would miss it, but it's not like it can't be found elsewhere. It's just nice to have it in one place on my website and other websites, and then of course I email it out to people every month. It just, to me, the name of the game is information. If a blind person has information, and if they can see other blind people doing other things, it motivates me anyway. And the availability of the mailing lists, some are even employment-related. Just dozens of different topics available to the blind through email that just a few years ago we didn't know anything about. And, of course, it's quick, too. You can get the information within minutes most of the time through mailing lists or off a website. So I'm motivated to do it just to help other people get the information, because I'm absolutely convinced the more information we have, the better our chances are of making some kind of a living through what we've known or what we've learned through the Internet resources.
How many people are receiving the phone book now?
There's about 700 that are actually on the mailing list. There's all 50 states, 27 countries, and my mail-out list is actually in about 700. It varies a little bit. I add and subtract some each month. Through the websites, mine and others that are seeing it, it's just an estimate, of course, but I would estimate a couple of thousand blind people are getting some information through the phone book archive files all around the world, and of course new other countries come online almost every month, and it's on every continent. It expanded into something I never dreamed it would be as a free electronic publication. Even some of the volunteers that are working on it are in the UK, and they have two guys that are helping out with some of the files in India. And I get, you know, people offering to help from all over the world, so it's definitely an international free electronic publication, and I hope it grows more in that way so that everybody can access the information.
That's one of the wonderful things about the Internet, isn't it? I mean, here I am sitting in New Zealand knowing that you and I are speaking to a worldwide audience. It's truly sort of baffling, really.
It is amazing. I've been a ham operator since 1966, so the international scope of communicating to me has always been fun and fascinating, but to get on the Internet and not have any interference, to be able to communicate, send a message. I do business with a company out of France. We email all the time. And to get that information exchanged within minutes is just, it's still mind-boggling to me, and I've been used to it for years, talking with the ham operators all around the world, but now to be able to actually do it on the Internet and even do it quicker, and just open up your mailbox and find out you have, you know, mail from somebody in New Zealand, Australia, and England, and South Africa, or anywhere, just, to me, I still find it amazing every time I just exchanged a bunch of email with a blind guy in Egypt who was asking information about the phone book. And in fact, when I first got on the Internet, the Egyptian government, through a blind person there, contacted me and asked if they could translate all of my DOS tutorials that I had on audio cassette. If I would mail them the tapes, they wanted permission to translate them into Arabic. And it blew me away. I mean, I didn't even know any blind people were on the Internet from Egypt. So the Internet is a resource that is going to do nothing but help blind people, and I really hope more and more blind people just are at least motivated enough to get a modem and get on the Internet, because that's where they're going to get a lot more help and a lot more information.
When people ask me about the Internet, one of the things I say to blind people who are curious is that it's the most exciting thing to happen to blind people since Braille. And that's quite a bold statement, but I think it's
true. Sure. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I suppose Braille publications and that type of thing and audio cassette publications for the blind will never go away, because they'll serve a purpose. Because not every person's going to get it. I mean, I know sighted people that don't even have computers yet.
Mm.
But for the blind person, it's almost going to become a necessity that they be on the Internet. They can get vast amounts of not even blind-related information, but just information in general off the Internet. And you just cannot do that quickly through a Braille or audio cassette-type publication. You have to wait, and it's you know, 2 or 3 months old by the time it is produced and sent out, and it takes a lot more work, a lot more effort, of course. And on the Internet, it's practically, if you know where to go to get it, it's instantaneous.
And that delivery mechanism may, in fact, become part of the talking book players of the future, for instance. I can see a time where the old postal system will be irrelevant, and that you can, you may want to phone up if you're an elderly person, not comfortable with technology or whatever. You may phone up your library for the blind, ask a book, your talking book machine will be plugged into the net in some way, and the book will just arrive on it.
Yeah, I mean, the technology is there. It can be done. It's just a matter of somebody doing it and getting it online. So you're absolutely right.
And speaking of that kind of thing, I remember that at one stage you were distributing a wonderful collection of e-texts. Is that still available?
Yes, I don't. I haven't really updated it now for a couple of years, just simply because I've been working on other things. But it's still available, and I've sent copies of it. And people have ordered it from all over the world. And in fact, somebody just—I can't remember who it was. I can't remember if I'm sending it to Australia or New Zealand. One of the two.
Oh, don't get those two mixed up, would you?
One of those two countries, somebody just ordered one of those, so it's still available, and one of these days I'll get around and adding a lot more information to it. It's got over 400 megabytes of e-text on it now, so it's got a lot of information on it.
Now, you've produced a number of highly acclaimed tutorials. How do you go about learning a piece of software to the degree that you feel confident instructing others in its use, particularly when it's not one-on-one instruction, but rather instruction on cassette?
I have not produced any since Windows came out. There were a lot of other the software companies and individuals started producing the Windows tutorials, and it's a limited market anyway, so I just decided and opted not to really get into the Windows tutorials, but I did a lot of DOS tutorials because that's how I learned from Doug Wakefield when I bought my first computer and got some of his tapes, and that's how I learned. And then for a long while there, it seemed like no one was doing it, and shoot, I was already learning software anyway and running my own bulletin board and learning new software all the time, so I thought I might as well record it, because people were contacting me through the FidoNet on my bulletin board or calling me on the phone saying, how do I learn WordPerfect? And I started making some recordings just randomly for people, and I thought, this is ridiculous. I might as well make some money off of the thing. And I started recording them in a more professional-sounding way. They were all basic. I assume that the person getting it did not know anything about the software and probably knew very little about their computer. And then I expanded. Some of the tape series were several tapes long, and I'd go into more and more detail. I never made a fortune off of it, but I still have people all the time emailing me saying, that's how I learned my DOS-based programs, and I got some of your tapes, and a lot of them are, I haven't really released them in the public domain, but a lot of them are copied now, and even in the DOS world, and still being used by people. So I just did it the way I learned it, one step at a time, and told people how I did it, and hoped they could figure it out. In fact, I tried to give enough information that once they listened to the tape, they could actually go through the manual that most software had its own ASCII e-text manual, and then from there they could learn on their own. And that seems to be even true with employment. If they get the first part of it, somebody can show them a little bit to get started, they can figure it out the rest of the way on their own.
You obviously enjoy communicating, because when I read the messages that you send on email lists, I enjoy them. They're well put together. Some of them are actually quite lengthy. You obviously feel quite comfortable at the keyboard or recording in a way that makes your views and your intentions very clear.
Well, for a blind person, it's the only way we can really communicate. I mean, you're either talking to someone or typing to somebody, and learning to do that well enough so that you get the point across is the name of the game. And I really have ham radio to thank for that. I got my license when I was 14 years old, and I was a very shy person. didn't talk very much, and in ham radio you either talk or nobody talks to you. And I learned basic communication skills, if you want to call it that, just by, well, I did a lot of listening at first, of course, because I was young, and listened to other people communicate, and it wasn't too long before I could carry on a conversation with anyone from anywhere in any country, and you know, carry on a conversation. Plus, I'm interested in people. I ask a lot of questions when I talk to people and find out what they're doing, and I have an honest, genuine interest in people and how they were raised and, you know, how they live, and especially in ham radio, talking with people all over the globe. I just found it interesting to find out how people live, so it's just carried over into the internet, and the internet's just expanded. I also enjoy writing. I do writing on the side. I've never really made any money doing it, but I like doing it, and the email is just a place where you can say exactly what you want to say and try to make it in a logical a format so other people can understand it. So it's a carryover from things I learned when I was younger, I guess.
And the Blind Dicks list is still up and running, is it?
Yes, it sure is.
Tell us a bit about that list and why that was set up.
Oh, Blind Dicks was a split off from other blind mailing lists. I wasn't trying to compete with anyone. It's just that some of the lists, in fact, almost all the lists I was happened to be on at the time when I first got on the internet, were pretty much computer related, people talking about computers, and I just thought I would help lift the load off of one. I was on Blindell, was the first one, and in fact it may have been the first mailing list that's ever been around on the internet, and I was just trying to lift the load on that, and started Blindex or Blind Exchange, and I thought it would be computer related, as it's turned out. Although we talk about computers and software and those types of things, it's turned out to be more of a place where blind people exchange their own personal feelings and ideas on different issues, mostly blind related. I'm not a very good list owner. I let the thing drift off onto topics that have absolutely nothing to do with blind people, but it's like I said the other day on Blind X, I get tired of being blind all the time, so I don't mind it. I allow people to drift off to discuss other topics that have nothing to do with blindness, and then when it gets carried away or becomes too politically oriented or starts taking over the list, then I try to bring a little order back and get back on blind topics. But it's been pretty rewarding, since it's just an open list to discuss blind-related topics, whether it's computers or political things related to blind organizations or whatever it may be. It's been pretty rewarding. I've had dozens of people. I think the first blind mailing list I started was nearly 4 years ago. I've had dozens of people write me privately and thank me just for moderating and owning a list such as the Blind Exchange, because they found out for the first time. I mean, I don't know how many people have written me and said, this is the first time I've ever heard blind people saying how they really feel about issues that they were afraid, you know, to admit as a blind person. They'd never discuss it, never mentioned it to anybody else. They were afraid they would be criticized, which you could be on Blind Exit. You could be easily criticized for what you say, but at least you can say it, and you'll find other people that agree with you. So it's kind of an interesting way it's evolved over the last few years on just on that mailing list alone.
Yes, it certainly is, and it's got a whole different flavor from most of the other blindness lists. And I remember when I was subscribed, there are so many of these, you know, jolly lists, you know, it's difficult to get your work done. But I remember when I was subscribed a few years ago, there was a fascinating thread about melatonin, which is one of the most fantastic things ever to happen to congenitally blind people. So all sorts of useful things there.
Well, and then when those topics come up, the interesting thing is to me is that other blind people go out and actually do research. You know, they surf the web and say, here's an article I found on this particular thing. And it may be something medical, like the melatonin, or in that case, I think that came up on the issue of, do blind people have more trouble sleeping at night?
Mm-hmm.
And It, you know, may be medical, may be scientific, it may be related simply to a piece of hardware or software or something. I'm always amazed at the information that is pulled into a mailing list just because somebody asks a question.
And what other projects are you working on? You seem to be doing so much, I'm sure I've missed something. What else is happening in your life at the moment?
Well, I'm always trying to think of something where I can make some money, but and I haven't become a millionaire yet, but I'm working on it. But I enjoy what I'm doing. I have other little ideas of things. Now that I'm getting a lot of help with the phone book files, I really want to expand that. We've got files listing real audio and internet audio sites. There's even a file there listing blind-related bulletin boards, if you can believe that.
God, do they still exist? Listed.
There's a few of them around, but it's becoming few and far between. And blind-related businesses, e-news, places where you can go and hook up with e-news sources. For sale, there's a for sale section, of course, and For What It's Worth, which is just a fun file of strange information that I collect and people send me and I put into the phone book. There's a friends locator file where blind people are trying to find a friend on the internet. Of course, ham operators, I have a home business entrepreneur type section I want to expand, and I want to work some more on that myself now that I'm getting some volunteer help. Mailing lists, miscellaneous information, news and information related to the blind, products and services, some blind related, some not. Some that blind people are just think products that they're selling but have nothing to do with the blind. And then of course the speech friendly websites. I want to expand all of those, and it's getting so large now that I'm going to have to break it down into to even more categories. There's that, and I work on my website. I'm actually behind on that. I'm trying to expand that a little bit and put a lot more information on there. And I do have a couple other ideas that I want to work on, especially in the area of blind self-employment in particular, that if I told and actually explained in detail what I wanted to do, nobody would believe me that it was possible. So I've learned not to describe everything that I'm thinking about. But I'm working on a couple other projects as I have time on the side. But it all is mostly internet related. I started distributing for a company called Parrot USA that sells a handheld. They manufacture and sell a handheld voice digital organizer, and I was so sold on the thing after I got one myself that I became a dealer, and this is the company that's based out of France.
And that's quite big here too.
It's really gotten popular, and it's going to get more popular as they release their new product here probably in late October now, it looks like. So it's and that field alone is really exciting to me. It's the first time I've ever owned a what we here in the States call a day timer. And or now it's a voice organizer, but it makes us equal. In fact, I just sold three of them to a sighted person. A lawyer here in the States bought three of them, and he wants me to send him brochures so he can show it to his doctor and other lawyers and sighted friends. So I don't know. There's parts of the technology area of life now that blind people are actually starting to pull up and be even with the sighted world, and these voice organizers and the talking computers and the internet is all a part of the bigger picture, I think.
Do you think a Braille user would want a Parrot?
Oh, yeah. it is, once you get one or something like it anyway, I'm not, I'll sell as many as the people want to buy. Here. I'll take all of your money I can get, but once you start using something like that where you can just pull up the information by speaking it into a device and it brings out the phone number, it'll dial the phone for you or remind you of a doctor's appointment or medication to take, anybody sighted or not. And, of course, they didn't make this for blind people. Originally, it was for sighted people. Their biggest market is in Asia. They're very popular in Asia, but they finally found out blind people were interested in the UK, and then they came out with a partial voice synthesized unit, and then when they found out that blind people really were interested, they came out with a fully synthesized talking device that speaks all of the prompts and says everything, and they've just expanded it from there. And anybody, Braille, blind, sighted, I've even talked to people with multiple handicaps now that are interested in the parrot simply because they think it might be able to help them.
I have a craving to play the Monty Python parrot sketch after all of that.
Yeah.
If you dropped it on the floor, it might. This is an ex-parrot. Yeah, so it has ceased to be. It's a very interesting, the point you make about this technology kind of overlapping, that something that's useful to us can be useful to lots of other people as well. And maybe that's the pitch that we need to really concentrate on for things like accessibility and appliances and cell phones and things that are becoming a problem for
right.
us.
Right. And the odd thing is a lot of things are automatically talking. I mean, you know, the microwaves and even parts of automobiles, you know, fasten your seatbelt. You didn't hook up your seatbelt. You didn't take your keys. I mean, there's all kinds of talking things now that are becoming a part of the sighted society itself. So, and of course, it's not nearly as expensive as it used to be. I remember when the first talking watch came out was in the 70s, and the prototype was $1,500. And, of course, now you can go down to a lot of little stores and pick one up for $12.
What do you think the future is going to be like for blind people and the use of technology? Because we've had little bits of fear crises over the years. When Windows came out, people wondered whether this was the end. We seem to have conquered that largely now. Are you optimistic about the future?
When it comes to audio, I'm I think the entire internet is moving to audio and video, and of course the video is not going to help us a whole lot in most respects, except for maybe transmitting it out. But the voice communication aspect of the internet itself, I mean, I can actually foresee a time when typing email and sending text and things are going to be minimal compared to audio and voice communications over the internet. It sure seems like that's the direction it's going. And I just heard something on the news here in the States this week where they're predicting that very thing. In the next 10 years, all of the telephone communications around the world are going to be routed through the internet. And for a blind person, when it comes to audio-based technology, that's right up our alley. I mean, that's the way we communicate anyway. So, and even video transmissions, they're going to have audio with it. So it's not like we're going to be even left out in that aspect. It's just we're going to have a restriction, but that's always been the case. So that's nothing new. But I really think it's all going to be, as you said, the talking books and magazines and everything, just dialing it up on the internet, to me, is the most exciting aspect of the internet right now.
It certainly is, and I try to reassure myself about this when we have crashes on the radio station and lots of problems, that we're sort of at the pioneering cutting edge of all of
yeah.
this.
Sure, you bet.
Yeah. Just before we go, tell us about your website and how to get to it, so that if anyone wants any more information about what we've talked about in the internet phone book, they can get in touch.
Okay, the phone book and all my other stuff that I'm usually working on is at Red, White, and AND, redwhiteandblue.org. And you can actually click on one of my email addresses there. My direct email address goes through the website, and it's Phil, P-H-I-L, at redwhiteandblue.org.
Excellent, and I highly recommend the internet phone book, and it's a very interesting website that you have, so hopefully people will pop along and pay you a visit.
Yeah, you bet. It's fun to fun to hear from people, and I get messages every day from people that are on there hunting around trying to find information.
Well, I realize you're on tenterhooks as we record this interview, waiting to become a grandparent yet again, so I really appreciate you giving up some of your time, and I know many people will have found this interview fascinating, and I'm sure we'll speak again at some stage.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I'm anxious to see what you're doing to expand, and that's exactly what it's going to do. I hope before too long you'll be on doing it every day, and you'll have so many people to interview, you won't know what to do.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
You bet. Thanks.